Blog Talk Radio.
Hi. I'd like to start this radio show with a song. New you, you, you. It's a gift to those that want to test it and find out for themselves if they get a real connection to real guidance and a real education from real guides. So we have Margaret in Lake Havasu City with us today to be interviewed and discuss things about life. So would anybody like to start the discussion or ask any questions of Margaret?
Yeah, Margaret, this is Val from Huntington Beach, and I kind of was curious about your take on the other bodies. You say we have five other bodies. Well, we also see that, but we have a little bit different view. We talk about the physical, of course, and then the astral, which is the emotional, then the causal, which is the memory body, the mental, and then the etheric. And you have the physical, the etheric, the spirit body, the higher mind body, and the soul body. And I wonder if you can kind of go over those and how you see those.
Yeah. I would, if you don't mind, like to explain that. I always seem to have to answer that question with all my... I taught over 20,000 students in Japan over 20 years. That's 1,000 people a year. And they all started off with pterogram therapy, crystal acupuncture, and there are many other therapies I have. And, of course, the primary thing about any therapy, whether it's EFT or anything else you can think of, is about having the aura delete vortices of energy that we call blocks. So when I was very young, my mother was a cripple. I was born in 1942, and apparently I was held in the arms of some nurses, and they went from trembling after the bomb across the road had wiped out many, many people. So, you know, I came in with a healing skill. And so I'm saying this so you understand, I'm not just someone who came into it at 40 or something. It's been my whole life. So by the time my sister arrived, she's 4.5 years later than me, the war had ended, I was hearing the voice of God in sound around. And to me, he gave me the word, oneness, and that's in my book, My Journey into the Oneness. So I'm just giving a premise about who I am before I answer this question. I hope you don't mind. So you understand where I'm coming from. So when my mother was holding my new infant sister, I had to go out to the kitchen for her, and in those days we had drafty fires, so you had to shut all the doors and put all the lights off because, you know, nobody had any money, and, you know, war-torn England, it was in a terrible state. And so there the light went on without me even touching it. I couldn't even reach the light switch, actually. And I heard, my child, you are a child of God, and you will know great suffering, and you will help those who are suffering. And, of course, I was hypnoidal, so I was, there was no way I was going to forget that. And then a similar thing occurred when the voice was fantastic, so warming and encompassing and nurturing male voice. And then it happened a second time where I said, who are you? Because I can't see anybody. And he said, I am the one. And I said, who is the one, in my childlike way? And he said, I am all that is. And I said, what is all that is? Because again, I'm a baby. I don't know, you know, 4.5, 5, whatever. You know, what do I know? And then he said, I am the one and all that is. And I said, what is all that is? And he said, oneness. And so that was how I got the word oneness. And as a result of that, went on to tell all the adults everywhere that I met, do you know about the oneness? Trying to find out. Nobody even had a glimmer of an idea of what oneness was. And everybody was into, is my Auntie Sally who died in the war, in spirit world, you know, blah, 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 because they wanted to know if there was life after death in reality. And the birthing of the psychic phenomenon had been there since the dawn of time. You know, we go back and we see people in the Greek time were oracles and things like that. So I'm not avoiding your question. I'm coming back to it. I just want you to understand this is not new. This is old, old stuff. But I had to be reacquainted with it as a child. So here's my mother, crippled with a sister, set up by God to be a healer. So, you know, I'm looking at my mother's feet, and I have psychic vision as a young child because I haven't closed down my inner eye yet. And so I'm looking at her aura, and I can see these layers. Now, I was too young to question mark them at that age, but they was vivid, as you see the drawings, you know, on paper. But for me, I could see them vibrating and resonating at different levels. And little did I understand that was all relative to coding. So coming back to your question, the physical body, through the workings of the body, and obviously I don't want to go into anatomy and physiology, but every single organ in your body vibrates and resonates as it works, creating a sound. And that sound is audible. For example, you hear your tummy rumbling, or you hear yourself breathing as your lungs expand and contract. You can even hear your brain clicking around in your head if you're transforming thoughts from conscious to subconscious and so on. So I was looking at that when I was young, and I used to collect pebbles off the garden, you know, pathways and things that seemed to me like gems that radiated rainbows, like the aura, you know, that I'd seen in my mother. And I would put those on my friends playing doctors and nurses, on mummies and daddies. Somehow I always got to play the senior. And then I would watch these friends of mine who are laying on concrete floors and these, you know, dolly toys and things all around us. I would watch their auras while they're sleeping. And I could see that same resonation coming from the physical form. And then I could see, because these were children, you've got to remember, and innocent, we're all like seven, somewhere around that age then. And I could see the etheric body, because we'd gone from I trust all that I am. Oh, look, I want to touch this, or I want to see that, and so on. To, well, maybe if I do this, someone may tell me I shouldn't. I could be slapped or punished. So I was starting to see that the aura had this area where there was conflict between the spirit and the physical body. And so when I asked my spirit guides, what is this shaking I can see outside of the physical body's energy? And that was when I told it was etheric. Well, you know, I didn't even know what etheric was till years later. But I asked, what is that? And I was told it's the mixing of energy. And, of course, I didn't know what the mixing of the energy was. So when I went into nursing, I'm now working with patients who are having surgery, and I've got people who are unconscious. They've, you know, had post-surgery and so on. And I'm looking at their auras, and I'm starting to notice this sort of gold, silver, purple, lavender energy coming to the fore. Oh, it was like coming from the edge of the aura over to the physical body, and I started to realize that I could see the spirit body was trying to heal the physical body. And so while it's streaming through, the spirit body is streaming through the knowing, believing, trusting, honest, truth self, it has to pass through the etheric, where there is this sense of doubting Thomas, fear, pain, anger, guilt, these kinds of things. And I could see the energy mixing and swirling down into the physical body. And so again, I'm 16 through 19, I did assistant nursing. I worked in a hospital home curables and people who were incurable, basically. That was my major lesson. And there happened to be a matron who was completely bedridden after some kind of accident. And so I was fortunate, I had to tend to her. And I told her these things I saw. And she said, "My, you are amazing, blah, blah, blah. I've been waiting for you." And I was like, "What do you mean?" And she said, "I want to teach you." And so she told me what the physical, etheric, and spirit bodies were doing psychologically, emotionally, and mentally, that every time we physically got involved with ourselves on some level about some kind of issue, the etheric body would in some way hold the memory of the pain and the suffering. And that if we didn't release the pain and suffering, then the spirit body could not hold fast within the physical body. And so I went on after that to notice that a lot of people are walking around who were half in and half out of their bodies. Their spirit body was kind of holding on to the etheric body, trying to stay in the physical body, while the physical body was so fed up with living life. Because you've got to remember, so many people were depressed during those years. And so they're pushing away, "I want to live, in the spirit world. I don't want to live here on earth. I feel like suicide or something." So I could see these three bodies constantly moving in the people that I was dealing with, healing them and nursing and whatever else I was doing at the time. And I might add, there were no books in the library in those days. So by the time I'm 19 or 20, I'm now a fully fledged medium, having been trained by my spirit guides to know what I'm doing. And at that point, I was brought to understand the higher mind body. And at that point, it's like, higher mind body, what's that? Because I was always told in school I was an idiot. You know, I asked too many questions and I surely should work out the answers myself. And when I did ask the teachers, half the time they looked at me stunned because they didn't know what I was asking. Because I'm listening to them, I'm listening to spirit guides at the same time. So when I asked, how does the higher consciousness come into the higher mind body of my biology teacher back in, 14 or 15 years old, she looked at me like I was silly and said, "Just go and pray to God." That doesn't help me very much. But of course, I went back to the spirit guides, and I used to go in my bedroom and just be quiet and sit. And sometimes I wrote notes. Sometimes, I heard them and listened to them and talked. And over time, going back to teaching 20,000 people in Japan, that body became the most important body that I needed to express to them, because in the higher mind body is all that is. In other words, your divine essence carries the knowledge and wisdom of all time within it, as well as all your past lives within it, which doesn't mean they're all on earth, because when you're in the oneness, there is no time. So you could incarnate, say, in 10,000 AD, and then come forward in time and reincarnate, shall we say, in 30,000 AD. To you, everything that has been between, if you've had lives between, are dormant. So you don't have access to them, because in embodiment, it would be too much for you to handle so much knowledge and information. And so, I'm sorry, I'm clearing my throat chakra talking about this. And then the last body that we have is the soul body, is the divine God aspect, the all-knowing part of self that can rejuvenate, heal the entire physical form, the get rid of all the blocks emotionally, mentally, physically, and spiritually. Clean out the spirit body of debris from associations of religion, philosophy, the RNA, the DNA, and the soul structure coding, which we all come in with. And then the higher mind body is able to bring forward what we would call today a guru person, a master teacher person. And I might add here, by the way, that, you know, gurus and master teacher people are not necessarily good. They can be very bad. But it takes a very old soul to be able to come to the earth, i.e. Hitler. Everybody's never going to forget Hitler in the Russia or Aga Khan. But in order to do that, they had to be in the divine essence of God, disruptive as possible as they could be. But recognize this, whoever is leader of the top of the tree doesn't do the dirty work. It's the followers that do the dirty work. And if you think about, for example, Catholicism and the Dark Ages, you know, Jesus didn't set that up. People set that up. So whether you're a good being or a bad being, you're creating energy, you're creating a vibration, and that emanation, auric emanation, is constantly shifting and moving. Now, when you stand next to someone else who happens to be at the time in harmony with you, you can say, oh, this is a friend for life, and I love them dearly, and so on. We mix, our auras mix, we really feel good together. And then one day, all of a sudden, they have a shift in consciousness from the higher mind, shall we say, coming through from the oneness, and that flows through into the lower three bodies, and then suddenly you don't like them. They don't fit with you anymore. And you just want to get away from them. And you don't know why. And you rationalize and justify all sorts of things. And then find out later when time has gone by why or whatever they were doing. And you start to go have an aha moment. And that's basically how we share across the world. We all have aha moments, good and bad. And I've gone on forever talking about it. But it's not something you can probably understand. That one question was very, very involved, so I'm sorry I took up so much time to explain it.
No, it's very good. It gives us an idea kind of how you see things, and it's interesting that you did mention the is, or the oneness is. I think you mentioned is, and we also recognize this reality that's even beyond what we think. Most people think of God and spirit and gurus and masters, this reality that just is. There's nothing you can add to it or say about it, or, you know, no ideas you could even have with it. It just is. It's an isness. So,
I just wanted to say that when God gave me that word, nobody knew what it was. Even when I went to India and taught there, they didn't know what oneness was. So I guess I started it. I never found anyone else who started it, so I don't know. Yeah.
No, you have a lot. I'm going to let's have some other questions here. Anybody else?
This is Quadi in Texas. I just wanted to say thank you for that information. It's very, very timely. It's exactly parallel to what the new presentation is presenting. We are given information from Duane, the great writer, who has written several books about his experiences with the All Is, and has brought forth a song. We don't chant or do anything like that, but we sing new you, and then ask a question and see what presents itself. So thank you.
That's interesting. Is you the word Y-O-U, or is it a U letter?
It can be either, but mostly it's a letter U. We start out with U, and then ask our question. We do it for 15 minutes before bedtime, and that gives us a chance to connect with the real side and access information about whatever we're looking at the moment. So you can look at things and see and receive information from the real guides who are there waiting to answer your question. Every question is answered, but sometimes we don't recognize the answer. That's why it takes a little bit of awareness of life and what's going on at the moment to get the answer, because it's specifically for you who asked the question.
There's so many different ways that all of us can find our way to connect to the oneness. You know, when I was a child, because there was so much unhappiness around me as a child, I would run to the local park, and I would sit under a tree or something and feel the healing of the tree, which, of course, it got very popular in the period of the 70s where people were running to sit under trees. But this, for me, this was all way before, you know, anything was being taught anywhere. So by the time I was 21 and started to work for the Spiritist Association of Great Britain, people were... you know, basically mediums were trance mediums, and you had supposedly to be 60 plus. And so when I turned up at 21, it was like looking at me disdainfully. It broke my heart. I felt, you know, like I was shunned in so many different ways. But once I opened my mouth and started to give the messages, which were completely always accurate, actually, I started doing that on buses. You know, I had to take myself to school and home on the buses when I was 7, because my mother was in hospital having surgery and things like that. And I would be getting messages for people on the bus, and it took all my courage to kind of run up to them and say something like, "Don't worry, you know, there'll be a letter next week," something simple like that, and then get off the bus as fast as I could because I was embarrassed. But I did that because spirit guides told me, tell that person, they would badger me. And so by the time I was, you know, 21, I got more courage to talk to people and tell people about their lives. Today, people ask me, they want their soul structure coding. Such a difference. I mean, back in those days, it was like, am I going to get a new job next week? And of course, people still have those questions. But today, more people are much more spiritually aware. You know, they've all had some kind of alien consciousness with Star Trek and things like that. And, of course, a lot of us have had encounters, and I have many with the Greys and the Arcturians. But none of mine were really bad, but I needed it. I needed to have the encounters with them in order to understand that we are entwined with two species. Spirit guides told me many years ago when I was braiding my hair, I think I had braids somewhere around 10 years old. They told me that we were, and, you know, our species was entwined with two other species. And by then I'd had a lot of encounters with the Greys on and off the ships, and occasionally with the Arcturians. And so I knew what they were talking about, but I didn't understand a lot of it until I was a lot older. Have you had any encounters, anyone?
Any what? Any what?
Any encounters with aliens?
This is Claudia in Texas. Oh, yes, we have. My experiences have been with the Orions and the Sirians from those two constellations. And what the information that was given about the Orions is that they came to the Earth hundreds of thousands of years ago looking for gold. And they found white powder gold in the Tigris-Euphrates Valley. And the Orion prince that found this wanted to keep this planet secret for his own personal use, and decided to change the DNA of the monkeys on this planet. So he made them smarter so they would operate, could operate the mining equipment and get the gold for him. They were instructed to worship him as a god. And that's how we came into the part where we're slaves to the god, to bow down and worship. And as time has progressed, these Orions lived for thousands of years. So he could appear as a god in any civilization or any time period he wanted, and still be the same person, just wearing a different disguise. So now we bow down and worship to quote-unquote God in church, beg for help, give him all the money that we earn or work for. So we're just basic slaves and doing his bidding. Once we wake up and see this reality, the earth will change. But it takes a lot for a person to say, oh, I go to church and my God is real. And you go, yes, he was real, but it was a ploy to get you to be a servant, a slave. And that's quite a bit for people to hang on to. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so you're basically talking, to Zechariah Sitchin's research, right? The bottom line here that I've always searched with my encounters with the Greys, I'll give you a brief experience of it. I was about three-ish when I saw the first one, and my mother and I both thought it was a little boy with golden hair at the foot of our beds, which I mentioned to her when I was that age, and she was amazed that I saw it, and she thought it was a spirit, and I didn't know who it was because I'd been talking to him and playing with him. So I thought, I don't recall it other than seeing him standing there at the bedroom door. And then later, drifting out of the window and up to spaceships was quite common. Waking up outside the building, I've got a lot of this in my book, My Journey into the Oneness. So a lot happened to me where I was taken aboard and tested. And basically, I, like everyone else, have transplant fears. And what they did, for example, I had been held in the bushes by the older boys when I was seven-ish. And there were spiders all hatching out, little baby spiders hatching out the laurel leaves. And I was creeping and crawling for ages. And so they took that and they put me in a room covered with spiders of all shapes and sizes. And I remember screaming and screaming. And then quite suddenly, the room wasn't full of spiders at all. It was sheer white. And then I realized that that was imagination. Something in me clicked and I knew that what they were doing is placing the horror in my mind to see how I would respond. Over time, I learned that whatever they showed me, testing me emotionally, mentally, physically, and spiritually, was all about checking my DNA. I also realized that they had checked my DNA through many eons of ages. And I also knew that they were looking for a better DNA strand aspect that they could take and integrate with their species to repopulate, or I should say populate, another planet. And as a result of that, I actually was made pregnant when I was 15 and a virgin. And they did to me what they did to Jesus' mother and father. They made a baby outside of the body and put it into her body. And I knew this when I was 12, and I'd learned about sex and all the things that go on for my parents. And I announced to everyone, Jesus was not made in the womb. Everyone thought I was crazy again. But, of course, once we learned ourselves to make a baby in the petri dish, then and put it into the woman, and the woman's life form would nurture it and survive it, I went on to realize that what they'd been telling me was absolutely true. And my actual, I don't call her a half-breed, but that's what people do nowadays, or a hybrid child. She's on another planet, and she's had three children herself now, of which they're my eggs, but somebody else's seed. She doesn't have ovaries, but she has a womb. They're still experimenting on making another species cross-section between themselves and us. And when I asked, you know, the oneness about how many times we've been, in quotes, interfered with or changed, they said we have been changed as much as 18 times. So I can't prove that. I have no wisdom to prove that in any sense of the word. I've only got that they told me that. And when they told me we've been changed 18 times, I said by the same people, and they said, of course not. Which still didn't tell me anything. So when you talk about, you know, Zachariah Sitchin's kind of information, his stuff is really good because he read the old papers and the old tiles and all the things. And he did the earth a goodness in being able to translate that. And I do suggest people read his books. I did read them all. And I felt as I was reading them that a lot of it I already knew thanks to my spirit guides, but there was a lot of tidbits in there that I think everyone should hear. But the ultimate thing is we're not supposed to really erase the light and the dark, but rather harmonize them. And everywhere I look, every day of my life, I see it going on. From terrible things like someone killing someone like the other day, to amazing things like a whole bunch of people going out and getting birds covered in oil and cleaning them. We have extremes of personalities and characters. We have thousands of perceptions on differences in our opinions about our lives because we live in different styles, in different countries, in different periods of, I mean, for example, we've got people living in the Amazon who still think a plane is a god flying over. We've got people in the Pacific Ocean who have made wickerwork planes and still praise it for when out of the blue, the Americans turned up with planes to use those areas as landing sites for fighting the Japanese. They promised they would go back. They never have until recently. Some people were filming and went to an island and found them there, still worshipping a plane made in raffia and palm leaves. So you see, our consciousness is very limited, and we have every opportunity to learn more. And the brain is expanding, and our bodies are getting bigger. And if we're just not so damn lazy, excuse my language there, but that's how I see it, like I've done 10 years in school, I don't want to learn anymore, we start to let the brain deteriorate, and then we start trying to meditate, but we're not active enough, and we're not productive enough, and we're too judgmental. That's my opinion. Got some opinions about that. I feel like I'm doing all the talking all the time. Tim, you got a question for me?
Yes, I have lots of questions. Do you know where you're going when your physical body no longer works?
You mean when I'm dead?
Yeah.
I've been clinically dead before. I was 35 and I had Parkinson's disease. It's a hereditary gene thing. My dad had it. My grandma was like Muhammad Ali. Her father had it. And then before that was someone else, but it wasn't called PD then. So when I manifested it, the very first time, I wonder what happened to me, because I froze, basically. I couldn't move anything. It happened twice. But in between, I had all these terrible head shakes and rolling pill shakes and tremors and stuff. And my doctor put me on some pills, which I didn't know anything about, and which he was my friend as well, turned out to be heroin-based drug. So once I taken too many, because I kept taking one more because my shakes were coming on again. The result was I took too many and I died. And I said, "Spirit, I don't want to be here. I can't do this work. You've got 35 years of me under your belt. I've never had any freedom to be me," kind of thing. And they were saying, "You just started your work." I'm saying, "Don't tell me that." And finally, I said, "I'm leaving, I'm coming with you." And they went, "Okay." And at that point, I felt like, oh, I'm letting the team down. I felt guilt. And guilt made me say, well, you've got to give me something good. And that something good ended up being in India, where I was teaching, and learned a great deal about myself. And came back with a higher consciousness. I brought with me the divine consciousness back, which they'd given me from the Holy Host, as I called it in those days, which now is just the universe. And in doing that, I've written a lot of books. I've got about 12 books. I've written a couple of screenplays that were going to be made, but they didn't have enough money. Coming of another sort of Christ figure and things like that. And so I've got all this stuff that I download from the oneness. And so I don't see myself passing back into heaven or the astral or anything like that. I see myself as integrating back into the oneness as joint energy where all things are known. And given time as before, that joint energy will find a common factor in an area of improvement where we'll all bother to incarnate again here or somewhere else with a dynamic that will cause us to question mark our evolvement. I don't think the oneness will ever stop evolving. You know, it needs to. And the core energy, which I wrote in my book, about Einstein's theory of quantum entanglement. I do know that everything is entangled and everything. You can do something here on this planet and not even know that you are affecting things somewhere else, but you are. So everything is in constant movement. And movement is friction, sound, resonation. And what that ultimately means is that there's growth and destruction in another sense too. What was is gone, we don't need it. And what was that is needed will arise again in a new form so that we can have another go at it. But basically we're evolving all the time. How do you think about that, Tim?
Yes, I agree that I'm aware that we've probably lived millions of lifetimes as we evolved, like from the things that started in the ocean and through the plants and the birds and the fish and all these things that we see in this physical realm, and that now we're in these human bodies right now, and we may have been the what we call aliens in previous lifetimes. Yes, I see us as evolving in this physical realm. Do you pay attention to your dreams?
Oh, yes. Every dream. In fact, people write to me all the time asking me to interpret their dreams. You know, in the word of a picture, it's 1,000 words, okay? So let's say you dreamt you were kicking a ball. I would want to know, number one, what position were you in? Where were you standing? What was your background? You know, oh, I was on a football field, okay? Were you looking at the grass or were you looking at the people in, you know, in? I have to draw sometimes things out of people because they don't really realize that every single thing that's in that dream is a symbol of self, okay? So, for example, if you saw green grass, I would probably, you know, in the person, assuming they're not too well, I would say to them, you're looking at your nervous system, you're looking at rejuvenating your nervous system. Green is the color of healing. Was the grass short or tall? You know, comes in. If it's short grass, then, you know, we're short on that energy. We need some more. If it's tall grass, oh, maybe we've got too much energy. We need to use it in a productive way instead of sitting on the sofa or being a couch potato. You know, so just to take that simple thing as an example, some people are very clever and they can remember long dreams. I used to, years ago, write all my dreams down. And even now, sometimes, occasionally, I'll get that book out and read them and I'll go, aha, there's a little clue there to today. Because we could dream something long before it ever actually makes any sense to us, even when someone explains it to us. I had someone I actually was doing that with a month ago at a convention, and she wanted to believe her dream meant that things were going to improve. And I had the unfortunate position of having to say to her, I'm afraid, no, it's the opposite. Things are going to be taken away from you so that you're free to receive more things, was the end of the interpretation. And when she finally heard all that, she went, oh, that's going to be the second time in my life that's happened. And I said, yeah, because we have cycles. You know, we can't have the same all the time. Otherwise, we get stuck. And she said, well, I am stuck. I'm really stuck in a rut now. I said, well, that's why you had the dream. So, you know, some things can be very simple. Do you interpret dreams?
I'm trying to. I'm trying to pay attention to my dreams and see if I can understand if they have a meaning that I can kind of see what they mean. But I wouldn't say that I do interpret them at the present very well at all.
So do you remember the dream you had recently, and I could interpret it for you?
Mm-hmm. Okay. Let's see. Let me look up one real quick for you. Let's see, what did I write down the 20th of April? Stuff about having to set up a system to get unstuck. Then, after getting unstuck, loading up the stuff to get unstuck. Well, that one didn't make much sense.
Let me just explain that. That's actually a very good one. Whatever you're loading up represents all the things that you have retained in your brain that you believe are your thought processes that are yours and yours alone, and they're not. They're going to be stuff you've acquired, like Mother says, fish on Friday, you know, or Father says soccer on Saturday afternoon. I'm just giving you simple stuff, okay? And so you've gotten a habit over your life of doing those two things, you see,
And then all of a sudden you start to think, why am I going watching this game? I got bored with it. Why am I going off to church? I don't believe it. You know, and then you start to say, okay, dump the history. Well, dumping the history is not just dumping the idea that you're going to watch ball game or you're going to go to church. You got to dump every time you ever did it. And that means every muscle, every nerve in your body is trained to sit in a certain position, like sit up well in the pew in church or lounge around and slouch about on the sofa for the game. Total opposites. And yet your brain knows how to manage that. And if you've got aches and pains in your spine, then what you're really trying to do is tell yourself, dump the history of I need to sit here or I need to stand there or I need to walk here or I need to, you know, whatever it could be. It could even be bathroom duties. It could be you suddenly get this urge to, if you're a woman, to dress up and look beautiful when you know you're going nowhere. It's all about you dumping every one of the times you follow through with a belief system that has been either erroneous to your life's existence or you've outgrown it. And that's what that dream is about. And you're then saying you're trying to make new thoughts that are yours or bring up the thoughts that were yours and own them and use them. Does that make sense to you?
Yeah, I guess. Do you have experiences with fairies and mermaids?
I have never seen a mermaid in my life, but I definitely have seen many fairies. And when I very first saw my first fairies, I was looking at a sort of a butterfly and trying to chase it. And then all of a sudden, it wasn't a butterfly anymore. It was a fairy. And so I remember, I don't know how old I was, but I was probably somewhere around that 4, 5, 6 year age. I remember sitting down in the long, tall grass that had turned brown, so it would have had to be in August, September time in England, looking at these butterflies all around me and then realizing that they were actually tiny little people with gorgeous wings. Another time I had a bunch, it was a bit, I was older because I was a teenager and I was reading up in what was the common land in London where people could go and get away from the hustle and bustle of town life. And I used to go there a lot. And I was sitting under the trees and these just moseying there and reading in between. And I thought these were what we call gnats in England, you know, little fly things that are pests and they're nuisance. And but as I'm looking at them, I'm starting to realize they're not. They're tiny, again, little fairies. And then a little later, I sat up and I found myself talking, I think probably some Gaelic language or something, because the wind was blowing my pages quite ferociously over so that I couldn't read my book. And out of the blue, I was just saying out loud this poem in some sort of Gaelic-y kind of, I didn't even know Gaelic in those days was a word, you know what I mean? And said it. And next thing I know, all the wind had stopped. And yet, about 6 to 8 feet from me, the wind was still blowing all the bushes around. But there wasn't a drop of wind on me. And I sat there just looking at it, astounded at whatever I'd said, because I didn't know what I'd said that had stopped the wind around me. And as I thought, how did I do that? I realized that I hadn't done it. I channeled the poem from the fairies, and I knew that, though I wasn't looking at one. And then the last time I saw was gnomes. I had my mother's opera glasses and I was looking out the window My sister was about 2.5, 3 years old, so that made me somewhere around 7. And I was scanning around the backyard, which was not a backyard. Originally, it had been a tennis court, but it was all overgrown because of the war. And I suddenly caught movement, so watched them. And there was this little gnome sitting just like in the books underneath some leaves smoking a long-stem pipe. And I was really, really enjoying watching him. And then into the picture, as I'm watching him through the glasses, came a second one. And they were talking just like we talk. And I was so happy watching this. And then my sister came along and yanked on my arm to try and climb up to where I was to see. And I couldn't find them again. But it was not imagination. Then I saw, the last thing that I saw was dragonflies. When I was about 14, we used to go with the church to these outings, and there were all these dragonflies on the pond, and people all, there were loads of them. And they were all congregating around the people. And people didn't like that, and they were afraid of them. They were running away, and I was just sitting there watching these things flying around, and I realized they were male fairies. And so I just sat there watching them. Later, when we were on the coach going back, people were saying to me, "Weren't you afraid of those? They're going to bite you and stuff." I said, "No," but I never told anyone what I saw, because in those days, they would have said I was stupid or something. So I kept a lot to myself, but they do exist. I personally can say that. I've also seen at the end of a rainbow. That exists too. We were playing ball, and this rainbow came right down where we were playing. And the kids and I, we were all running backwards and forwards through it, and you could see the sparkles of water in it, and the water was on our arms, and you could hold your arms up and see multitudes of rainbows in each little tiny bit of water. It was so mystical and so wonderful. That was an amazing experience. Yeah.
Yeah, you've had some real wonderful experiences there. What would you say... What would you say the purpose of life is?
The purpose of life is to keep the oneness, which is all that is, in existence. No matter what planet we're on, we have to have diversities. We must have resonation, and we must have reverberation. And to get that, we need stimulation in sound. So sound is the core of the oneness, which is friction. And that is created by dark mass, out of which compressed dark mass implodes, causing an implosion, which then causes an explosion. I don't know much about black holes other than I know that that is the birthing of the dark side before it explodes. When those holes explode, and we'll get the opposite, we'll get mass. And I see that as gaseous. I see the cosmos as gaseous in its sense to explain it. And every gas is different, so I can't define that. But as gases hit one another, they create some kind of reverberation, explosion, whatever you want to think of it as, and entwines and creates, cools and becomes from gas to liquid and from liquid to solids that we know of, but not necessarily in a solid form that we would know of, say, in another planetary area. No parts of the universe are all the same. I've been out of body many times as spirit entity to other planets. And like once I was taken to Neptune, and I was standing on something spongy. I couldn't see. It was all misty. I didn't know what was going on. And all of a sudden I heard this little squeaky voice, saying, "You're standing on me." and I didn't know what I was standing on, and then next thing I know, I'm not there anymore. So, you know, there's species of things that we can't even begin to imagine. And when we see something like Star Trek, you know, I sit back a long way and go, well, if we can think of it, it must exist somewhere. You know, because you can't create something unless you've got imagination. And imagination taps into the oneness to say, what is in existence? We use it. So each one of us is capable of downloading something from the oneness and using it in this world to help us evolve.
Thanks. But you say that you have spirit, you call them spirit guides. Do they have names?
Oh, yes. Well, of course, you know some of them. Like Archangel, or the Archangels, actually. I've been talking to them since I was very young. But Archangel Haniel was the one that saved me 2 times from being killed during the war. The first bomb, as I said, dropped across the road where my mother birthed me and they were cutting the cord. And the second one dropped across the street from our apartment when I was 3. So I remember that one very well. And you can't forget those kinds of things. They're too shocking. But the bottom line is, Haniel, Raphael, Gabriel, Michael, you know, all of them, Arakiel, Faniel, Zephiel, I've been talking to them my whole life. I talked to Siddhartha Buddha. Actually, I knew more about Siddhartha Buddha than I did Jesus. Jesus would just come and stare at me. You know, I have strong memories of all of that. I know I was with him in physical body. I know a lot more now. Not necessary to talk about it. Same with Siddhartha Buddha. So many I've had over time. Cornelius Tacitus, who's the historian, thanks to him, we know what Rome was like. Otherwise, you wouldn't have known that. He wrote about it. Master Chang, who taught me all the crystal acupuncture and the crystal work and how the earth is, and Socrates, who taught me about watching the ants and watching the plants and looking at symmetry and all these kinds of things when I was young. You know, Plato, who was talking about the evolvement of energy and the power of energy and amplification with crystals. It just goes on. I've just had so many great teachers throughout my life from the oneness, as well as people's families like auntie and uncles and grannies and grandpas of people that have passed on, you know, in different languages, in different countries. I've worked with wonderful interpreters who, you know, have always helped me a great deal, because without their language interpreting, I wouldn't be able to help anyone, would I? So, you know, it's very easy to channel in trance spirit guides, and I've done a lot of that in public work. And they'll come through, like if, say, Gandhi, he'll come through with his Indian accent, or Rama, who's also Vishnu. All these different people, you know, will come through with their accents if they wanted, for people to believe it's true. And I'm asleep, as it were, just letting them use my body. And a lot of people are too afraid to do that because they think that they can't tell the difference between a spirit guide and an earthbound. Earthbound spirits make you feel uncomfortable. They put suggestions in your mind, like an alcoholic who's passed on and doesn't know it will hang around a developing psychic and give them an urge to want to drink alcohol. And, of course, if they're in a situation where the marriage is on the rocks and all these things happen, it's very easy to justify that feeling and have the alcohol. And then the next thing you know, their negativity gets worse and worse and worse in the marriage till they end up screaming and yelling and you know, want a divorce, whether or not the other partner is to blame and shame in their consciousness or not. It's another question, because sometimes the person who's insisting that, you know, they're possessed by an earthbound spirit and they don't know it because they can't tell the difference. So I do a lot of clearing of people who've got earthbounds around them. I don't have to be with them. I come out of body and do that with the higher spirit guides. But I do have to help them reclaim their own consciousness afterwards and rebuild their minds and hearts to trust themselves again. There's a lot goes on that people don't realize from the oneness. And you might say, well, how come an earthbound would possess in the mind, you know, a human being? Well, the bottom line is it's another form of unity. It's another form of the dark side saying, learn this lesson and move on and teach others about this lesson and move on and towards the light. And then, of course, when you get the other side and you've got the very light, higher vibration spirit guides, they're saying, get down to the earth, get practical, get real, stop running around trying to live like you're holier than holy. Start realizing, you know, you have to roll up your sleeves and get down there and scrub the floor just like everyone else. So you have to learn to harmonize like Siddhartha taught me, the dark and the light, and use both. Yeah.
Yeah, I see that as tap lines of these beings you're saying that possess other people. I see that too all over the earth that it's taking place. If I mention some of the guides that that are in my life, I just wonder if you might recognize, I'll say like 10 or 12 of them, and if you know of any of them, like Phoebe Quantz or Yabel Sakabi.
Only Quantz I know about. He didn't stay with me very long because his focus is more about the musical connotations of sound, the vocals, the vibrations. So he works a lot with people on throat chakras and what we say, what we do, justification, rationalization, excuses. So if you're working with him, that's what he'll be working with you on, sound, resonation, reverberation.
Uh-huh. Do you know of Yabel Sakabi?
No.
Do you know of...
I don't work with that person.
Do you know of Rebazar Tars?
Tars I've heard of. Don't know about the Rebazars. Is that part of the Federation thing?
Not that I know of. Rebazar is called the Universal Guide at the present, and he's been around for many, many, many years in the physical body. I understand he's still alive in
Can you spell that for me? Because I'm not sure if I'm hearing it right.
Yeah. It's R-E-B, and now it's spelled I-S-Z-A-R, I guess. And then Tars is T-A-R-Z.
Okay, so you're talking Reverend, first of all, the R-E-B, right? No. I have never heard of anyone like that.
Of Rebazar Tars?
Yeah, no, I've never heard of anyone. But if I ask spirit guides right now, I hear... I'm sorry, but I have to say this because I have to give what I hear. An illusion of an idea that someone will stay indefinitely on the earth in human form. The reality is that a spirit guide can appear on the earth in a spirit form and manifest self. Okay. I'll give you an example. I was sitting on a park bench crying because my parents have been arguing about me again. And all of a sudden, someone sat next to me. She was dressed in a pinafore wrap over kind of thing of the 40s, and this was now in this, I don't know, 50s. Probably I was about 15. She gave me a lot of advice. It was wonderful. And then she said to me, you need to go. And she'd probably been talking to me for a good 3/4 of an hour. She said, you need to go. Your parents are worried. And I literally got off the chair, walked 3 or 4 paces, turned around to thank her, and she wasn't there. Okay? There was no way she could have disappeared to. Okay? I've had several of those events. Even with my husband, we were driving and we on a sandy road and we were getting lost, so we thought. And we saw this hut and we pulled over and there was 2 Mexican type people there and Native American, I guess. And they gave us a Pepsi each and told us where to go to get off this road. Well, coming back, we thought we'd come the same way and take them a whole crate of, you know, to replace, because they didn't seem to have much, and they said this is where they lived. There was no hut on the way back. So, you know, I want you to understand that I'm feeling more, whoever this person is that you mentioned, that they are, it's a spirit that appears in form when necessary for a purpose, to help someone else.
Uh-huh. That woman that sat by you on the bench may have been a woman by the name of Kata Daki, who's also a real universal guide. Have you heard of her?
No, she didn't tell me her name, and I didn't ask. I've never seen her again since.
Uh-huh. Can you tell my intent by my voice and what we have talked about so far?
That's a sort of mysterious question that I have to ask you. From what angle do you want me to look at your intent? I can never see something as just a simple answer, because I always can see many angles and different things. So one thing I keep seeing with you that I have to come back to is, and talking about the throat chakra, is music. And you were saying, you singing, you know. I feel you really need to do some good oming rather than you. You know, if you do, like, I don't want to blast everybody's ear out, but if you go, oh, yeah, that's not my full blast. That's a tiddly blast. But I'm sorry if I shook you, but I want you to feel that in your body, to resonate throughout your body so that your whole body tingles afterwards. And with the force of the oneness, you can vibrate your body to a point where you can get your blood system to be stronger and rejuvenate your body better. And so singing and reverberating your body is something your spirit guides want to do with you right now. So is that part of your intention to heal yourself?
My intention is to become more aware.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, I did love singing with my mother when I was young. Growing up until I entered grade school, and then I guess they didn't like people that walked around at recess singing, so they kind of took my heart out of singing. I still enjoyed music and things in my later years, but I'd lost the feeling that I had that I enjoyed the singing when I was little.
That's one thing I was talking about earlier on, where we had these thoughts in our head, oh, you know, I used to sing, but I can't now. And so by my oming with you right now, believe it or not, I've probably opened up your throat chakra, because I never do, we never do. I have to remind you, I have spirit guides in my head all the time. We never do anything without purpose. And purpose is about intent to help others improve. And so, you know, even the darkest entity, and you know, do you know what a succubus is a fallen angel. Many of the angels that were on the earth in the ancient times took on forms like dragons. And so they got stuck in that form. And even now, China and Japan and Malaysia and places like that still worship the dragon. And there was one particular one that was stuck, and he had his hordes, his minions, and he was telling me what he wasn't going to do to me was probably the easiest thing to say, because he was determined to wear me out. And a short version is in my book, My Journey into the Oneness, where I just let him go on, and all I kept saying was, you are becoming. And ultimately, he noticed that his little skin, you know, from the dragon part was breaking off. And it's like, what are you doing to me? And the moment he showed fear, his minions of people following him felt his fear. He'd lost face. So at that point, I said to him, you have a choice. You can go into the oneness and bring them over with you, or you can go back into the dark. Either way, you're the leader. He chose to take them all into the light. And today they are free, wherever, probably reincarnated or whatever. He turns up as a golden dragon now first, so I know it's him, and then he's human in appearance. You know, not all dragons, are ferocious. It's just they got stuck here and they didn't know where to go. And in the same way, you know, archangels, you know, not all angels have wings. we have expectations of how people should be. And when you think back to the Egyptian times when they were genetically engineering back in those days, why do you think they put humans with, you know, a bird's head on it or a bear's head on it or whatever it was? Because they were trying to say that these creatures were created by humans. But who were the humans? They were aliens? From where? And what was their blood system like? And how did they transform and change us? You know, I've been studying a lot about the DNA, and my current work is about the soul structure coding that we come in with that gives us a personality and a character which entwines with the DNA, which is our ancestry. On average, each of us watches 5 generations being born before we turn up, which sets the pace for what we're going to do, because we're all in a sort of soul group that are preparing for something. And then looking at the RNA, how we learn by being told this is what to believe, this is what to do. And, I'm believe it or not, I'm going to write a book about this in the overview about someone famous. They want me to do it. I didn't want to do it, and I'm not saying who. But spirit guides want me to do it because it will bring the point home to the world that we all come in with this soul structure coding, which is entwined with the DNA of ancestors and current with the mindsets and beliefs of now. How, in the overview, one person can affect a great transformation, either in the dark or in the light, i.e. Jesus changed the world. At the time of his death, nothing changed. Everything was the same. But given time, and given the Christians being thrown to the lions, and given time, and seeing the Dark Ages, and given time, seeing the Catholic faith dissolve into Presbyterian and fundamentalism, and given time coming forward now into spiritualism and awakening of the consciousness, his message hasn't been lost. Love thyself and love thy neighbor. We still got to learn to do it, you know. And most people, when you say, do love yourself, they'll say, not really, I'm not good at this, I'm not good at that, before they'll say, well, I'm very good at this and that. So we're still in judgment on ourselves and in the mirror image of that, everyone else. We've got a long way to go before we understand unity. And there's a lot of light workers down who are trying to teach this.
Excuse me, Tim and Margaret, sorry to butt in, but we have 15 minutes and I wanted to give Sandy a chance too to comment or ask a question or share something. Sandy's from Wisconsin. Are you there, Sandy?
Yes, I'm here, Val. Thank you. First, I want to thank our guest today for coming on. I've enjoyed the show immensely. And I do want to say something about Rebbe Zartarz. He is always with me. He has been with me for many lifetimes, which I have a memory of. And he made a big appearance when I was 21 in this lifetime. So he gives a lot of guidance. He gives a lot of protections, as the real guides do. There's many, many real guides. Tim mentioned a few, and there's others, like Shamusi, Tabriz, and Rumi, and many, many others that will make an appearance if you're aware enough. And I want to tell a little funny thing. When I was a teenager, I used to go out to my aunt's cottage and take a huge tractor inner tube and go out and float out on the lake. It was Lake Winnebago. And these so-called dragonflies would come on my inner tube, and they were male fairies. And I just used to love to go out and watch them on the inner tube. They always wondered why I stayed out there so long. I never told them. But I had another experience not too long ago with fairies that was quite beautiful. And they appeared to me as the vision opened. I was sitting on green grass with the trees and the flowers. And they appeared to me in these beautiful glistening bubbles that just kind of came across. It was very pretty. I've also had encounters with your Orions or your reptilians that breed, and the Syrians, like Claudie has. And the other day I went into my closet and there were two little tiny aliens hiding in there. I have a portal in my kitchen that many aliens come through, and not only aliens, but animals we're familiar with on the physical plane here. And I just thought I'd just say a little bit about that. Well, I'm done saying it, but I do have a lot of experiences with these aliens, extraterrestrial beings, and some of them are very nice, some of them not so nice, but they're here, and this is a reptilian planet, so this is what we're dealing with, and this is human farming. So I'll just end with that. Thank you.
Well, that was interesting. you confirmed about the dragonfly. Thank you for that, because I've never had anyone else tell me that they saw male fairies. And then the other thing, you know, that I did want to say is when you mention all these names, you've got to remember that anyone is in the spirit world from any planet dynamic, because remember the hub is consistently omnipresent. And the spokes of the cartwheel, think of it that way, are time periods, century periods. So you could incarnate before Jesus and then come back in 450,000 AD after Jesus, you know. And you can go in and out, backwards and forwards any time you want. And the process of your presence in that time era, whatever it is going to be in some way transforming and changing. So we're all transforming and changing somebody somewhere all the time. Well, so in the same way, these spirit guides, they can have 101,000 names, and they can turn up looking like anybody. I mean, when Elvis Presley died, I had people all over the place telling me that Elvis Presley was in their house. You know, one woman told me she'd have me sex with Elvis Presley in her house. And, you know, the bottom line is that was an earthbound pretending to be Elvis Presley. You know, a lot of times spirit will use someone that's passed who's been in a good vibration and appear as that person because the people who are looking are expecting to see that person. So if you loved Elvis tremendously and you're on drugs yourself and he appeared in front of you and said, you know, you need not take those drugs or you'll end up like me on the other side, they're going to listen, aren't they? You know, so earthbound, you know, can be uplifted as well in the same way when there's a massive consciousness on this planet, there's a massive transformation. And the spirit guides can appear in many different hats, you know, in different styles and different ways. And you get to a point eventually where you just say, well, whoever it is, I am. That's how I see it.
I was just wanting to ask you about do you see this physical realm as cause and effect?
For us, from our perception, yeah. If you were just to walk across the floor, you are moving the air. You're changing the atmosphere in your home. It doesn't matter to you because you have nothing to do with anything from your consciousness. But if you walked past a spider on the floor, you would sound like thunder turning up to that spider and you've had an effect on that spider. So it's just that we don't notice that we're having effects on other things until it interrupts the way we think and the way we feel and what we're doing. Then we feel it. Then we notice it. And if we look for something in the mirror image, that there's five laws of karma. The first one is no one fragment, we're all fragments, can invade the space of another at any time on any level. So if I'm watching a movie and I tell you, go out of the room and leave me alone, please, you've got to do it. You could sit down and be a bloody nuisance and I could turn around and then say, I'm responsible for how I respond to you. And I can say under the second law, get out of here now, blah, 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 and scream and yell at you. And I'm responsible for my emotional response, not you. And then, you know, the third aspect is that we love one another and our differences so that we basically accept one another and our differences. And then the fourth law is mirror image one. We see ourselves in other people. And the last law is love God. And the thing is, how do you define loving God when you don't know what God looks like? So you have to love it in everything that's created that we see. And that's not easy when you've got people yelling at you or someone cutting down trees and whatever it is, where we disagree. So, yes, controversy is the main energy that we need that causes us to evolve.
And have you ever heard of Jehovah as being the Lord God of the astral plane and Grog being the Lord God Almighty of the mental plane?
Yes, and that I've heard all that and I've learned to dismiss all that because that's all people who congregate together under one consciousness and believe for themselves that that is the ultimate thing. It's not. And for the average person to be able to embrace the oneness that all things are part of God that is, and God doesn't need a name because it just is the oneness, all that is, I am, you know, is reflected right back to each one of us. And it's up to us to amalgamate. And once we amalgamate, then we're going to understand what oneness is. But we're too busy fighting right now. So it's difficult.
Yeah, as you were talking about the Om, what I'm becoming aware of is that's connecting beings that use that sound to this realm, in this physical psych realms. And what I'm becoming aware of, that there's real universes beyond these psych realms and gods. There are no gods.
Yeah, if you think of our universe here, okay, Milky Way and all that, and you look up to night goggles and you see all those different blobs of rocks and things, I was just dumbfounded when I looked up, because I'd been seeing that, but in the human body. And so when you if you ever have night glasses and look up at the sky and see just how much stuff is up there, and then realize the same thing is going on inside your body, you begin to realize that you are a part of that cosmos, that you are, you're in form, and your body is biogenically working just as the universe is biogenically working in its form. So
well,
nothing is a waste of time. It's all perfect. It just keeps moving, and that's what we want. Keep moving.
And Tim, four minutes.
Yeah.
Just give you a heads up. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, Margaret, it's been nice to have a discussion with you, and for your answers to questions. And does anybody else have anything they'd like to mention to Margaret? Or Margaret, do you have anything else you'd like to say in the next 4 minutes?
Well, I kind of feel I've been hogging all the time because, you know, I get so much to teach and share, and I'm sorry if I did, but I didn't know if anyone else was going to be talking about what they do. It wasn't made clear, so I'm sorry about that if I cut someone off.
No, that was why we have this Blog Talk Radio, to have people to talk with about what we see life's about and what they see life's about. And Val or anybody else have any last questions or something they'd like to say?
No, I really enjoyed you, Margaret, and what your view of things, because you're an explorer, obviously. You've done a lot. You've got a lot of experiences, and they're very interesting, actually, because you know they relate to how we see things, with the you call it the oneness, and that the you use the is. We use the term is too. This all isness that is beyond, you know, all these creations that people have created for themselves, that the gods and the angels and all these things are just manifestations of certain things, but the isness is just very real. It's almost in your face. It's so real, and it just can be recognized. That's how we see it. You can't do it. You can't add anything to it. It can just only be recognized, and you support it. You mentioned that too, that you know, we're part of this reality, and that's so true. This, we're part of this isness that just is, and basically all we can do is support it. And you also mentioned the guides and how, yeah, they come in different forms and guises, and it really doesn't matter. It's just are you becoming more aware? Are you recognizing more? That makes sense. So thanks a lot for being on. Really enjoyed it.
Thank you. If I could just give my website and email, I'd appreciate that. What I have is sumaricenter.com. That's S for sugar, U, M for mother, A, R, as in Roger, I, S for sugar again, center, American, CENTER.com. And you can see my books and what I do there. And, you know, I have packages and things I help people. And then if people want to write to me, my email is dr for doctor, Margaret, M-A-R-G-A-R-E-T, and then my capitals for my, well, it's not capitals in this, is it? RVC, Rogers Bancroft. So Dr. Margaret, RVC, @gmail.com. So anybody can write to me and ask questions. And I'll go from there. You know, I'm always available. I'm actually a professor and a minister. I've got a lot of qualifications. So I can help people with illness, disease. I can help with their minds, their emotions. I'm also a hypnotherapist and counselor. So I have a lot of things in ways and means that I can help people. Everybody's
thanks again. Well, we've got a, I guess that's our limit for time. So
yeah.
Thanks again, Margaret. Good talking with you. And I'm not trying to convince you of anything, but you might want to try and test singing the new you for like 10 or 15 minutes. Before you go to sleep, and see what real guide appears in your life, in your dreams, or
yes, I'll try it. I'm always
all right,
to try what other people give me to do. Thank you.
Yeah, the new presentation, and it's wonderful. Worldwide educators. It's on the internet all over. Kelsey Lynn Brown has the Skype groups and discussions and every week. So if you're interested, to check it out. Good talking to you, and we'll see you.
Yeah.
Bye, everybody.
Thank you. Thank you, everyone.
Everybody.
Bye, bye.
Thank you.